Welcome to the sidelines. I'm Matt Dolph. I'm back with Ty Anderson. And apologies for not putting up a post-game podcast last night. But I needed my beauty rest. And Ty needed to stay up all night writing. Ty has not slept in 62 hours. He is, I don't think he's malnourished because I think he just had some breakfast. You know, had some Reese's and Coke for breakfast. So I think he's okay.
I had cereal.
Coca-Cola. That's cereal. Okay.
It's cereal.
Well, that's good. That's good. All right. Well, we're going to pick up the pieces. The Bruins season is over. They bow out in five games to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And before we get to, like, you know, there's a lot of problems that rose back up in this series that are going to be questions to ask throughout the offseason going into next season. But I just want to look at that, the silver lining, look at the bright side. I know there's, you can't really have moral victories in professional sports, but I'm just glad that they showed up and gave Tampa their absolute best possible effort last night. They didn't lay down. They could have absolutely laid down once Tampa scored that goal in the third period. They could have said, all right, well, 7 minutes left, we can go home now. Came back, tied the game, fought through, they outplayed them in overtime and just couldn't finish the deal. And then finally Tampa closes it out with, was it Hedman that scored? I don't know if it was Hedman or a deflection,
yeah,
but
it was Hedman.
Yaroslav Halak played his ass off. He absolutely showed up, played his best game of the playoffs, and it was too little too late. But I don't know. I feel good that they at least, you know, that they at least wanted to win. They wanted to try to come back in the series.
Yeah, and I think it kind of comes back to, you know, I think we talked about this. I'm pretty sure it was here. Maybe it was just my personal life, but who knows? That if they lost, if they won game five, they were going to lose game six. And if they won game six, they were going to lose game seven. I just felt that they weren't going to win this series. And you go down 3-1 to a team like this, you're not going to win the series.
No,
so
they weren't going to win three in a row.
No, so you go out swinging. You go out with your best effort, probably definitely of the entire series. Maybe your best losing effort of the entire postseason, I would say as well.
Yeah.
So there's no shame in that. Tampa's a good team. They're a deep team. There's frustration, obviously, with the way it played out, with the way some of the mistakes that you made along the way as a team. But overall, I mean, you got beat by a team that is probably the Stanley Cup favorite. You know, neck and neck with Vegas, I would say, as being the favorite among the field of eight entering the round. So, hey, it is what it is. I mean, it wasn't going to end well, but at least they went down swinging.
Tampa looks like they're ready to go win a Stanley Cup. I think it's been a few years with their core, and they've had some their own share of disappointments. Looks like they're ready to go close the deal. So I would have picked them to win the cup going into the playoffs if we had to make picks, and I would have picked them to beat the Bruins if we had to make those picks, and came to fruition. And yeah, they're just a superior team. It's not as frustrating a loss as last year, because besides the obvious that they lost in game seven of the cup finals, I think they lost to an inferior team in the St. Louis Blues. And you saw that, by the way, the St. Louis Blues just choked out of the first round this year against Vancouver. And so they obviously had a much better team than St. Louis, but I think Tampa was just a much better team than them and a better built team to win in the playoffs. And I'm going to harp on this all the time because I don't feel like anyone's listening to me except you, Ty. I like you. You listen to me. They need to get bigger and they need to add more skill. And I know that might be too much to ask, but I think that there's just going to be a little bit of retooling going on up front. And I don't think the window's closed. I mean, I know there's going to be a lot of window talk with the Bruins, especially with Zdeno Chara might be calling it a career, and we don't know if Tuukka Rask is going to be back. But I think you have a core of Marchand, Pastrnak. You assume Patrice Bergeron's going to stick around for the remainder of his contract. Charlie McAvoy, I mean, even if you want to throw guys like Brandon Carlo, Matt Grizzlick in there, Charlie Coyle, I think that's a core that you can absolutely build around and have a legit contender. And I just think the pieces around them need to get better. They need to not just get better overall, but need to be a better fit for what you need in the playoffs and a better fit for what you need to beat a team like Tampa, which I think is I have to keep saying this because I think people just think I want a team full of Nick Ritchies. I don't. I just want guys that can hang with a bigger defenseman on the forecheck, create more space for his line mates, get to the front of the net better, get to the middle easier. they just didn't have enough of that. And I thought the shot of, I mean, they have a similar problem on the back end with the lack of size. I think the shot of Torrey Krug, who, by the way, he might be gone. He might have just played his last game as a Bruin. The shot of him trying to push Patrick Maroon out of the way, it looked like Frodo Baggins trying to move Gandalf out of the front of the net. Like, that's just emblematic of the issues that have plagued them for three playoffs in a row now. So, I mean, I don't know. I know you think – I know you're more of a speed skill guy, and I do think they need to get more skilled. But do you agree with me that, like, the window is still kind of open for this core, and they just have a lot of retooling to do? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that they need a legit upgrade in their second line. And I don't – or their second – or their first line, for that matter. I think that the time for the home run is now.
You said that on TNR. It's time to go for the home run. They've been trying to hit singles and doubles that then strike gold. It's not working.
Yeah, and I look back at 2019. If they get Mark Stone, they win the Stanley Cup. You know, if they
Mark Stone, perfect example.
And then I go back to 2018. Before that, if they get Ryan McDonagh instead of Rick Nash, maybe that's a different story.
Oh my God, that would have been awesome.
And you go back to this year, if they get Kyle Palmieri instead of Kasha and Richie, you know, how did that change what you could have done?
Blake Coleman.
Yeah.
guy that played well against you in this series.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of guys every year that we talk about as being the top guys of the market. And it just feels like the Bruins always go for the safer play, which it's not. I mean, listen, they've been to the Stanley Cup final. They won a President's Trophy. But ultimately, it doesn't matter if you don't win the Stanley Cup. And we go back to 2011. 2011, they got their guy. They got Cabrera. He wasn't a huge piece of what they did. But they swung for the fences. They made that move. They said that we're buying in on this team, and we believe this is the piece that will get us there. Now, Peverly and Kelly were more impactful on that run. But again, I just think that at a certain point, you need to say, let's go. What are we waiting for right now?
Right.
And I think that now, after losing in the Cup, losing in second round of Lightning the other 2 years, you got to do it. Just do it already. What are we waiting for?
It's time to swing for the fence. It's time to keep your top line, keep Charlie McAvoy, and keep Charlie Coyle. And I think everyone else is on the table. Even Stadnica, who I liked, but like Stadnica, DeBrusk, I know they just signed Bjork to an extension, Lozon to an extension, so maybe they want to give them a few more years of evaluation to see what they want to do with them. But I think everyone else should be on the table. Make a big trade. Make a big signing. Do what you got to do to bolster the top end of your lineup and just make him a better fit for the playoffs, because what you're doing just hasn't been working. And I feel like he's banging his head against the wall, Don Sweeney, is to continue to make moves the way he is. And I know they came up just one game short, but I think that the fact that how you saw them play against Tampa this year, it shows how far away they truly are from a cup. They need Tampa and Washington to choke in the playoffs for them to even have a shot at making the finals. The team they beat in the conference finals last year is the team they beat in the first round this year. So I just think they're farther away than last year would indicate. And I just think they need to make those big moves. And I don't know where that is. I know that's easy for me to say, just sitting here talking on a podcast, but like it has to be done. It just has to be done.
Yeah. And for me, it's just, I mean, you bring up the whole size aspect. It'd be great, but we talked about this before. Do you have any confidence that they're going to find the right guy? They're like 0-5 now. They can't
not,
find
not
that
the big
guy.
Physical guy, but can they get another Charlie Coyle? Because they hit that was a home run trade.
Who knows
what Ryan Donato is going to be? And Charlie Coyle looks like a top six center for you for the next 7 years or however long he signed.
Can they get another
Charlie Coyle? Can they get a Charlie Coyle for the right wing or the left wing? That's my question.
I would love. I mean, I said this on TNR. I would love if they made a serious play for Sean Monahan. I know he's not maybe
– he's a center, though, right?
Yeah, but then you move Coyle to the wing, and you do that for a year, and then you reassess where you are, because at the end of next year, David Krejci's a free agent, and who knows what his plans are.
Yeah.
And so that would almost allow you to sort of have your options still open for the long term. I wouldn't be against a move like that. And I'm of the belief that – if you want to truly win, you need to have that roster versatility you know, I look at Tampa Bay, right, and they have Tyler Johnson playing the wing right now. Tyler Johnson broke in as a center, but now he's a wing, and when they had Stamkos healthy, he was playing the wing as well. I just think that, you know, there are many different ways you can build it, but you either have to have tremendous center depth or you need to be able to kind of have that versatility where you can move the pieces around. So I would be against getting him the great center and then allowing yourself to move Coyle into a top six winger role when need be. I think that he could do a lot of damage there if he's with Bergeron and Marchand for a full season. I think that'd be a good fit. And then it just gives you more balance if you have that third line center who can sort of replicate what Coyle does. So
yeah,
they have a lot of options. I just think that now is the time to get real and acknowledge the mortality of this crew that
yeah.
You only have, I would say, one more kick at this before things get truly, you know, dicey with this core and with this roster, because it's not getting any easier next year. Torrey Krug is the one guy they might lose this year. But after that, Tuukka, Krejci, Halak, McAvoy's going to need a new contract. Carlo's going to need a new contract. You know, it's not going to get any easier from here, managing this cap and managing this roster. So load up for next year. Do whatever you got to do to load up and get going.
Yeah, moving Coyle up to the top line is something I'd be in favor of. So that's exactly the kind of player I'm talking about that I think that line sort of needs, because they were okay last night, but it's just too little too late, and they're not doing enough at 5-on-5. Again, you're depending on your power play to score, which is extremely frustrating. Like, I can't believe we're singing the same song and dance again with the 5-on-5 lack of production. It's just getting frustrating. And yeah, I think moving Coyle up to the first line right wing is something for a full season is something I'd be on board with if you're moving Pastrnak down with Krejci, assuming Krejci stays. Mm-hmm. DeBrusk is someone I think needs to be on the table for a trade if you're able to make an upgrade at that spot. And yeah, if they got someone like Sean Monahan, they'd still have a solid third line. I think they might have found something, honestly, with Bjork, Coyle, Stamika on that third line, if they're not going to make a big move with those guys, if they're going to keep those young guys around. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they have something there, but I don't know. They gotta get a little heavier and a little more skilled, which is, I know, hard to find. But yeah, it feels like all these other teams are flush with these kinds of players that are helping teams win in the postseason. And for some reason, the Bruins just can't – they have a blind spot there, which is frustrating. But they're going to have to figure that out, I think, if they want to get this team to the next level. And I think next year is an empty the bucket kind of year for this core. And, you know, whether they win or lose, just go all out with what you got left and then move forward with – you know, the Pastrnaks and the McAvoys and the Coyles of the world, and then build around them from there. But next year, I think they got to empty the bucket.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I would say this about, you bring up Stamika. I know that people in the Bruins management have been pretty impressed with his development. I think that he's on a faster track than they imagined. So that can be a bonus, I think, for them next year, whether he begins at center or he stays on the wing. I do think that they like what they have with him, and he's progressing, again, a lot faster than they originally imagined. He's only had one full season of AHL hockey, and here he is playing in a must-win game 5 against the best team in the league, maybe.
Yeah. And he never looked overmatched or anything like that. He never made, like, a glaring mistake. He looked like he belonged, which I liked to see.
Exactly. I mean, he had one issue where he made a backhand pass, attempted one, and it was almost picked off. And that, if it back got picked off, it was going to go the other way.
Yeah.
And may have been a goal. But other than
yeah,
that,
you're going to get those pains. But there was never a time where you're like, we need to get Stamika out of here, get him out of the lineup. Mm-hmm. We said that plenty of times about Bjork and Richie, and even last night, Andre Kasha. It's just like, I think the frustration finally boiled over for this guy not being able to score. Is he under contract for next year, Kasha?
Yes, at $2.6 million, and I just,
so they don't have to run him out there. They could trade him if they want. They don't, like, it's not like they're saddled with that.
Yeah,
I don't know. He's frustrating. I liked the way he was playing early in the series, but the longer he goes without finishing a play, how much can you get excited about a guy who skates well? Like, I'm just sick of having guys who can skate but not score, mm-hmm. guys who are big but don't hit. It's just I don't know. I still don't like the mix. And Kasha is just part of that frustration.
Yeah, I mean, Kasha was, I mean, you have to hope that a full offseason program with the Bruins and a training camp with the Bruins helps him get going. Because at the end of the day, if he doesn't, I mean, I'd rather have Backes. And that sounds insane to say, but at least you have a first round pick. You know what I mean? At least you have that still.
It could work out. I mean, I thought, like, all things considered, don't you think he looked pretty good considering that he made it to camp late and, like, barely played with his line mates? Like, he looked pretty good at first. It's just frustrating that he can't finish.
No, but that's the problem. I do think that watching Andre Kasha with this team and on that line, I found myself saying, I'd rather have Anders Bjork there because at least Bjork is part of the future. He signed with a 3-year extension and – you know, I would feel better about his experience having gone through a full playoff run in a top six role, saying he will be better down the road for having gone through this. Andre Kasha gave you the same thing that Anders Bjork would have given you. He creates, he skates well, he doesn't score. He makes some mind-blowingly bad turnovers, but he recovers pretty well. There is almost no difference to me with watching Anders Bjork and Andre Kasha, with the exception of one is a right shot, the one's a left shot. I didn't see anything from Kasha this postseason that made me feel comfortable with the fact you give up a first round pick and $1.9 million in salary cap relief to make this guy a top six winger on your team. That part is frustrating for me. I just don't see this being the answer. I just don't.
Yeah. Defensively, I mean, what do you think the answer is? Because, like, I'm not one to say that Char needs to retire because I respect him too much. I'll let him retire on his own terms. But I think if he decides to play another year, I think it has to be in the specialist kind of role. I know we talked about this last time, but I think it's time. I think the days of him being like your top pairing big minute defenseman should be over now. I think he should be a third pairing guy, penalty killer. Put him out there in defensive situations, and if you're trying to come back or build a lead, you conserve his minutes because I just don't think he can be that guy for you anymore. And it's nothing against him. He's obviously had a great career. He's just gotten past that sort of past the expiration date as far as like being the number one guy. And I think Charlie McAvoy has grown into that number one guy, which is great to see. It's great to see how well McAvoy is playing.
Oh, he's
the defensive end and just the way he moves the puck in the transition game. And I think the offense is gonna come for him eventually. He's still only 23 years old. Mm-hmm. And by the way, McAvoy looked like – I thought he got a concussion, but he came back and he played out of his mind when he came back in that game, which I loved to see. Like I just really like what they got with him, building around him as the franchise guy moving forward. But I think Char needs to move to the third pairing. But just the question is, what do you do on the top pairing? Because I think that's going to be a huge question for them. If they want to keep contending, they got to figure out a suitable partner for McAvoy. So what do you think they should do?
Yeah, I think the most logical answer to that is Matt Grizzlick. And I know he doesn't have the size quality to it, but that's a pairing that I think plays a style that Bruce Cassidy wants to play. I do think that this defense – if they're going to be built the way that Cassidy wants it to be, it's going to be quicker decisions. It's going to be less, you know, sort of, you know, loafing around and
no dilly dallying.
Yeah,
as my coaches used to say, lollygagging and dilly dallying.
I think breakneck speed is kind of the way that they want to play. And if you have a defense that is active and can make plays and has a long reach and is quick at breaking plays up and going the other way, that speaks what the team wants to do. And I do think that Chara is not that guy, obviously. We've known that for a while now, but I do think that is a priority for them. So, you know, is Vaakanainen ready to be that guy? Can he step up into an NHL role?
I was going to ask you about Vaakanainen.
Can Zboril break through? Zboril was, you know, for all the hemming and hawing of the 2015 draft, and rightfully so, speaking to people who saw him in Providence this year, he was one of their best defensemen down the stretch. I'd like to see him parlay that into an actual, you know, NHL quality training camp and push for a roster spot because there might be one for him, depending what happens this offseason. So
yeah,
I want to see how these guys develop. I think it's time. You know, you spent first round picks on all these players, so let's see what happens with them, and you go from there. I just think that they made a concerted effort to rebuild the defense for when this moment came, for when Chara walked away or slowed down. They spent first-round picks on Zboril, McAvoy, Senishin, and they spent second-round picks on Carlo.
Akinade was a first-round pick.
Yeah.
18th overall, you know.
Like, and just... they picked Lindgren as well, who they traded to the Rangers. They made it a point to develop these guys for this exact moment. So let's see how ready they are. I know McAvoy and Carlo are ready. It's the left side. The guys who were direct replacements for Chara, you know, Zboril, Bakunin, those are the guys that I'm curious about. I want to see if they're ready.
Yeah. Lozon, I think Lozon's ready to play in the NHL full time, I think. Probably not a top pairing guy, but I think he's a guy who should be part of your core. If you end up moving Grizzly to the top pairing, at least temporarily, then Lozon's a guy you could keep for the third pairing. I really hope Bakunin and Zboril are ready to go. And I always try to give defensemen benefit of the doubt, because it's a harder position to learn at the highest level, and it takes more time. Usually it's hard. You rarely see a guy like, I think McAvoy is turning into like a rare kind of player where like he looks like a franchise defenseman just about at age 23, which you really don't see terribly often. You know, like even Victor Hedman took 5 or 6 years before he really turned into the player that he is now, and he was the second overall pick. And, like, how long has it taken Aaron Ekblad in Florida to develop? So, I mean, yeah, I think now – but I think now is the time that we got to see what these guys can do as far as the World Bakunin, and see what Lozon can do with a full workload, see what Grizzly can do on the top pairing. And, I mean, maybe next year is sort of a bridge year for that side of the defense. Because, yeah, like, I think you're locked in with McAvoy and Carlo as your top two right-pairing defensemen, but – yeah, I think on the third pairing is where you can add that vaunted size that I'm talking about, because I'm confident that McAvoy could be a guy who can push a big forward out from the front of the net. But again, you got Anthony Cirelli getting behind your defense last night. You got Pat Maroon pushing Torey Krug around. It's just frustrating to watch. And I know a lot of questions, but I mean, they have potentially a lot of options to fix there. And
yeah, I mean, I would love to. I
sort
mean,
of rambling here.
No, I, you know, one thing I like to see them do on defense is unload the John Moore contract. I mean, that's 2.75 million that can really help you this offseason, whether it's retaining guys or adding to this team.
Someone who can actually be in the lineup is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've paid this guy. You gave him a 5-year deal to be a number 7 defenseman. When awesome. You have all these defensemen coming up in the pipeline and. I mean,
I never got that.
That's just bad GMing. I think that, you know, listen, he might help you if you're in a pinch, but at the end of the day, he's not a must have in your lineup, and he's making too much money to be a spare part. So, and I like Moore's personality. I think he, you know, he understands his role and he plays it well, but you know, that's 2.75 million they need. They need that money right now. They need that to upgrade this team. And they need that to not be utilized on an eighth defenseman. He can't be that in that role at that price. It makes no damn sense for this team for him to be in that role at that price.
Krejci and Rask are around for one more year each. Do you think there's any possibility that they would unload those contracts as, you know, a trade for a low draft pick or something just to save the money? I mean, everyone's going to say they need to trade too, because they've been saying it for years. And now, like, more than ever, people are going to say they should trade him, which I honestly don't blame someone who says that, because in Tuca's case, I don't see why I wouldn't blame Don Sweeney or Cam Neely from a hockey standpoint to look at Tuca and say, well, we can't rely on you to be here for us anymore. We don't know how much you even want to play hockey anymore. And it's nothing against his decision or like the fact that he wants to be with his family. I completely respect that. It's just from a hockey standpoint, I feel like they might look at it and say, we need to go in a different direction now. I don't know if we can bring back Tuca, even if it's for one more year, because we don't know how he's going to feel when it comes playoff time, if he's going to want to play. And like you said, on Touch or Rich, like if they have to play in a bubble again, I mean, maybe he won't even bother going this time, which again, I wouldn't blame him for doing that. In goaltending, do you think they need to go in a different direction? Do you think there's any possibility that they could trade Tuca with that contract?
I mean, it's a legit conversation now, right? I do think that beforehand it was a lot of just, you know, bullshit stirred up for the fact. But if they can't rely on the guy, you can't have him as your face of the franchise goaltender. You just can't do it. So I think the discussion is legit. I think the discussion is, you know, you talk to him, you see where he's at, and you go from there. I just, it's tough for me to criticize a guy's situation. I don't know the ins and outs of it, and I don't, and I don't plan on finding out.
Not the personal situation, just from a hockey standpoint.
No, and I
stick totally, to sports.
yeah, no, exactly. I just, you know, if there was ever a time to add a goaltender, it's now. You know, you got all these options available at free agency. So they need to get that answer from him soon. And I mean, would I be surprised? I wouldn't be surprised if he's traded. I wouldn't be surprised if he's back here next year. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's your starter come game one of the 2021 postseason. I just, nothing would surprise me with this guy. I think that he's going to bear the brunt of this shitstorm right now because of everything. And just, he's an easy target to begin with. So
brutal.
So we're going to see how that plays out and whether or not that impacts how the front office handles things, because we've seen, you know, we've seen the reactionary moves before, right? We've seen how they've panicked and traded someone at the first sign of danger or the first, you know, whatever. I'm curious to see what happens with him. I think that's the second most interesting storyline this year beyond Zdeno Chara and what he does is what happens at Tuukka Rask.
You said Matt Murray and Jacob Markstrom are going to be free agents. See, I mean, that's something I'd be receptive to them making that signing, as long as they're not like way overpaying. See, like I would hate it if like all of a sudden they dip into free agency and bring a guy from the outside and pay him just as much as they paid Tuukka. Like that would be a little frustrating. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Do they really have a choice? Because Daniel Vladar doesn't look like a future starter at this point. Yaroslav Halak obviously isn't going to be good enough to get you all the way to the Stanley Cup. And I know Jeremy Swayman is a goalie that they feel good about, from what I've heard, but he's probably not ready yet.
No.
So do you think it has to be maybe like, I don't know, a bridge signing, or if they could maybe like get a goalie, get one of these free agents to sign for like 3 or 4 years or something while they develop a younger guy behind them? I don't know.
Yeah, to be honest, I wouldn't want to touch Matt Murray. I just not really sold on him. He's trended downwards in a big way these last couple of seasons, I think. And with Markstrom, I just think that you'd be getting another version of Tuukka, where I watch Markstrom, you know, all Vancouver's run, and he'll make a tremendous save. He'll make a few of them in a row. And then he lets up, you know, a shitty shot from the point or just a goal that he needs to have. And it's like, oh, that's backbreaking. But the way he's performed, I think, has set himself up for, you know, a $7 million contract, $6 million contract.
Yeah.
And
especially if Vancouver keeps making a deep run, like if they come back and beat Vegas.
Exactly.
And he's going to get too expensive.
So I think that at the end of the day, I don't really want to take a gamble on that guy over Rask if the savings are only $1 million. Like that's not really worth it to me. At that point, I'd rather spend the extra million and have a guy that I know works in your system when he's available. One guy that would interest me, and his market might be out of the Bruins' control now, again, because of what you're mentioning is the deep run, is Robin Lehner. I think that he's performed very well with the Islanders, another strong defensive team. He's performing well with Vegas, another team that plays some good team defense. That'd be a guy that would interest me. I'd be very curious to see what his contract is going to look like after this. But that's a name that would interest me.
Lehner's not on the Blackhawks. Is that a different Lehner? I thought I saw...
No, he was. He got traded to Vegas at the deadline.
Vegas, not yeah, the Blackhawks. Yeah.
No, he was on the Blackhawks, though, but he got traded at
Last year he dominated for the Islanders, right?
Yeah,
he had like a Vezina caliber season almost, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and it was weird because he had to settle for a one-year deal with Chicago, which is working out for him now because he's going to hit the market and probably get signed by somebody for some good money. But that's a guy that would really interest me if the Bruins decided to move on from Tuukka. We'd obviously have to see what the return would be for Tuukka. But I do think that if they were ever going to do it, you know, now is the time. Not when they got Martin Jones, who stinks. Now would be the time when you have a lot of quality options on the open market. You know, the names you mentioned, but also Corey Crawford is a free agent as well. With Chicago, and he kind of had I thought he had a pretty damn good year, bounce back year with Chicago.
Yeah, I'm open to a change. I think everybody's going to be open to a goaltender change at this point. completely respect what Matuka's doing, and I don't like. Who knows if he's even gonna play again? Maybe he retires, or maybe it's just he just didn't want to be in the bubble. But at the same time, it might come to a point where he has to be in a bubble again next year. So I don't know. Maybe it's time for him to call it, and I guess that's gonna be the biggest transition of them all, really. I mean, you could say maybe moving Char down and the defensive pecking order would be a bigger change, but they've had a rock solid goalie back there. I know he's a polarizing player, never won a cup as a starter, and he's come up short in some big moments. But I mean, you don't want to see what it's like when you have a bad goaltender. Not that Halak is bad, but you sort of saw what it's like to have a goalie that you can't totally depend on to bring you all the way to a cup. That's what you just saw in this past series, and it's not that it's all on Halak, but
no, and
you can't be giving up some of the goals you gave up if you want to
exactly win. And that's the thing, for as bad as Tuukka has been in some of his starts, and listen, he's been bad, he was never as bad as Halak was. And when Halak was at his lowest in this postseason, he was far worse than Raf's worst day, you know what I mean? Like that was a rough watch.
Is your cat like scratching your speaker or something? I'm hearing like popping, scratching noises for the last few minutes.
No, it's probably just me. Just, I don't know.
Your brain is short circuiting. It's picking up
probably,
the signals.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. Do you still hear it? Or are we good?
I haven't heard it in the last couple times.
Yeah, it's probably
maybe it's
me.
Stopping now because I yelled at it.
Maybe it's poltergeist. Maybe my apartment building is being swallowed whole by the demons.
Maybe we haven't slept well and we're hearing voices. Maybe that's just.
That's probably true.
We're not even talking to each other right now. We're both in Danvers Mental Hospital, just sitting in the corner. I want the Bruins to win. Oh.
I think the biggest thing that's going to frustrate me about this run and how it ended is the fact that they just went so cold, and it opened the door for more, I don't know, I just think nonsense narratives that, we're going to talk about Tuukka, not the fact that they couldn't score any goals. We're going to talk about, you know, the sort of just the end of this run, when the reality is, well, it wouldn't be the end of the run if they were able to get Krejci an actual line mate on his right side, and I would argue his left side. DeBrusque, I thought, was awful this postseason. I really did. He just never caught fire. And with each postseason now, 2018, and his knack for scoring big goals feels like it's
that's dried up.
Yeah, it just hasn't been there. So I think that we wouldn't be having these discussions if they fixed some of the issues that plagued them a year ago, still, and the year before that as well. We're still having these same conversations, and it's maddening to me.
Well, we are. Your point is that. Other people are focused on Tuukka. I feel like with my talk about needing to get bigger and more skilled, I feel like I'm sticking to the real issue, which is they need to get better at scoring 5-on-5, which is just continues to be an issue, and that's frustrating. So I'm looking at Jake DeBrusque's contract situation. Is he a restricted free agent? Is that what's going to happen?
He is. Yeah.
So what can they do there? Can you even trade a guy who's a restricted free agent, or do you think they could even get anything for him?
Well, they can
trade to a team that wants to give him a deal. Because if they sign him to like a 7-year, you know, $6 million, it'll be kind of frustrating. Maybe he eventually puts it all together and starts scoring at a higher level, but I don't know. I'm just really not seeing it. Mm-hmm. You said on Toucher and Rich that he feels more like a third line left wing. I think he would be a perfect third line left wing. If it comes to the point where Charlie Coyle's still your third line center, maybe try DeBrusque with him. Maybe see how that turns out. I think they might pair well together. And I think he looks good with Stadnik on the right side too. So maybe that's something to look at. But I don't think he, at least not right now, I don't think he has enough to be your top six, second line left wing. And like you said, he's supposed to be your third best winger. And he just hasn't really lived up to that. So what would you do with DeBrusque?
I think DeBrusque is in bridge deal territory. I wouldn't give him more than 3 years at 3.5 per. I think that he's too.
They've done that with a bunch of guys, so maybe they do that.
Yeah, he just hasn't. He hasn't delivered, and he needs to find. We've talked about this before. He needs to find that balance between being white hot and being ice cold. You know, you can't just be the guy who scores 10 goals in 12 games and also the guy who scores zero in 18. You can't do that. And I do think that he is – I think that it's being revealed here that he is probably a third liner on a cup-winning team. I think the sample is there now that this is what he is. He's had three postseason runs, one of which was good. The second was inconsistent. He was a little beaten up during it. And the third one, he was inconsistent again. And so I look at that and I say he's a third liner. I don't think that he's a second line wing. And this whole idea that you're going to win a Stanley Cup with him being your third best winger is fantasy land. It's not going to happen. I do think that a change is needed there. Not like moving him out of town, but lowering his expectations and what his production is supposed to be.
Right. Yeah. Typically the reaction is run his ass out of town.
Yeah, no, I think he can be a good piece for you. I just think that you need to put him on the third line where you can dominate matchups and not he could benefit from having a guy like Coyle on his line. I do think that's something that he could.
Yeah, that's something. I'm surprised they never tried that.
Well, they did this year.
They never moved him off. Like, I don't know. It seems like Cassidy thinks he benefits from the consistency of just always being on that left side next to Krejci, because he's a guy that they rarely like move around. Isn't that,
yeah.
Is that, you know, I don't know what that is, but that just
They put him with Coyle for a good stretch this season, and it was the best he looked, I think, all season. He was playing with Coyle.
And it was – they were the third line still. It wasn't Coyle up.
I believe it was Bjork, Coyle, and DeBrusque. And DeBrusque was playing his off wing, I'm pretty sure. But again, it was the best that he looked all season. He never had chemistry with Krejci this year.
Now I remember what you're saying when they moved it to the right side.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he would just benefit from playing more of a third line kind of matchup.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that, you know, he pushed for 30 goals last season. But again, if you're not going to, you know, the consistency needs to be there. And if it's not there, that's a problem. And I think that's where we're at right now with watching DeBrusque play and his expectations and the pressure they put on him to be, again, that second line driving force. He's just, I just don't know if he can be that. I just don't.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think we've covered everyone on the roster at this point. I mean, they obviously know what they're doing with the fourth line. I think, they'll all be here next year. I'm not sure, but
Nordstrom's a free agent. But
Nordstrom, I liked him a lot. I think he played really well. Actually, he was one of their most consistent players.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of like talent level. So I mean, I wouldn't mind if they gave him another 1 year deal or something. But fourth line, I'm not too worried. They sort of know how to pick those guys as they've proven over the years. And it's really
top six
they got to worry about.
I'm ready to move on from him, and I'm ready to – and listen, I love what he's done, but I think that you got to see what Trent Frederick can do. Another guy you drafted him in the first round.
Sinishin.
Yeah.
Sinishin is a guy I want to see because he's got a little bit of size. He can skate. He can forecheck. Maybe he'll be another guy who can't finish, but I want to see what he can do.
Yeah, I thought we were trending towards seeing one of those guys in this series. I really did, just given the way that – the third line was looking. I thought we were going to end up seeing one of them. We came close. We see Sudnika in there for the game five. But, yeah, they need one of these guys to take a step up, and I think this is the year, next season rather, is the year to see it happen because there's going to be a lot of availability. There's going to be a lot of camps, camp competitions. But they get a logjam here. They really do. They have a logjam of guys who are solid but not quite solid enough. You include Frederick, Sinishin, Kuhlman, Richie, Kasha, Bjork. They got all these guys that, you know, you had six guys competing for what feels like three or four spots. You need one of these guys to grab a hold of it and run. And you can't have another year where these guys are all popping in 10 to 12 goals and 30 points and bouncing around from the second line to the third line to the fourth line to the first line to the press box to Providence to the third line to the second line. Like, you need
the
stability.
Consistency.
You need stability in your roster. And I think that you're going to have to rely on one of those guys to break out.
I agree. This is all to say, this is a long way of saying, I don't think the window is closed. I think a core of Pastrnak, Marchand, McAvoy is something that any team would be able to build a nice contending team around, as long as you build the other pieces around them the right way. And then, like, to your point, which you brought up before, with Tampa Bay is going to have their own sort of roster crunch, and they may be left where they only have really Kucherov, like something like Kucherov, Point, and Hedman are the guys that they really need to build around. And I think this is just where you put a GM to the test, is where are you going to be able to make the right moves, make a big trade to bolster the top of your lineup, keep the right young guys around, fill in the holes that you need, build your roster the right way to make an actual deep playoff run and beat the best competition, because they just haven't really measured up to, in the front office, they haven't really measured that up to that, I don't think, in my opinion. That the drafting hasn't been great, and other than Coyle and Coyle and Johansson trades, that the trades haven't been great. So I think it's a big year for Don Sweeney, a big offseason for Don Sweeney, maybe more than anybody, really. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, and this kind of comes back to, if you remember, we had this discussion in 2018 where they had a lot of middling talent that were coming off great seasons, or they were still unknown, and they didn't trade any of them. You know, they almost held on too long, and they didn't really pan out. You know, JFK didn't do anything. Heinen never got better than his 48-point season.
The one guy they got in the Sagan trade, they immediately traded for Jimmy Hayes, Riley Smith. And that was the one guy that they could have kept and had him pan out. He would be a perfect top six winger for them right now, I think.
He's what they need.
Very frustrating. That trade screwed them, and then they continued to re-screw themselves by getting rid of the one guy that actually worked.
But I do think that because of that, they are gun-shy when it comes to trading some of their younger talent. And, you know, that's when they need to do a better job of saying, is this player ever going to get better than he was this year?
That's where you need to evaluate your own talent. You can't just hold on to everybody.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem. I think that sometimes Sweeney in the front office has a tendency to sort of be like a kid who doesn't want to share their toys. You know, they're so afraid that you're going to steal the toy and have more fun with it, they don't want to give it to you.
Was it Sweeney or Cam that said that we want to stop sprinkling our young talent around the league? Like,
well, that was Cam. That was Cam who said that.
Which I understand, because like when people might have been talking about trading Pastrnak back like a few years ago before he really broke out, and then, so obviously that would have been a mistake. And so I get it, but like you have to identify your talent, and you have to take chances. You can't just sit on your hands. And like you said, let a guy like Jacob Forsbacka Carlson just fizzle out and never really do anything. That's a guy you could have traded a few years ago. Yeah, and maybe gotten a valuable piece. So
he wasn't that great.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's so many cases of that. And I do think that this team is a little bit gun-shy when it comes to that. But your best centers are 35 years old. Your goaltenders are 33 and 35. Your captain's 44. He might not be back next year. You know, you're probably going to lose one of the top five power play quarterbacks in the NHL this offseason. You know, it's just, they need to strike while the iron is still hot. You know, they no more excuses. You got to do it. You know, there's the gap between what they have and their future, especially at center, it's pretty drastic. You're talking about going from Krejci and Bergeron to Charlie Coyle, who's good at what he does, but is he a second line center? I don't know. You know, and then you have Stadnica, and then your next best guy is probably John Beecher, who's still in college.
Jesus.
I mean, it's a big drop for this team. So they
maybe they just need to sign someone. I don't know who's out there, but maybe they just need to, like,
Taylor Hall is the big one.
I don't know. I'm all set. Yeah. I've seen what he has to offer. He's talented. Maybe he could score, but I mean, I don't know. He's never really gotten to that next level as far as a playoff performer. You know, like, that's a guy that, I don't know. They need another left shot.
I mean, well, I would say that, you know, he's the kind of guy that would constitute a big splash, and believing in what you're doing and bridging that gap. It's just a matter of what is his contract. If he's getting $9 million, I don't want him. But, you know, if he's getting 7, 7.5, I don't know. That's fair
not
to
too
me.
Bad. Yeah, that's not too bad. He was an MVP candidate a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's only been to the playoffs twice, you know, with New Jersey and Arizona. I don't want to hold that against him too much.
I thought he had a reputation, though, for being like a problematic kind of.
Yeah, I don't know where that
guy. I don't know how true that is.
But I look at this. This is what I care about. He's played 14 career playoff games. He has 4 goals and 12 points. I'll take that. I will take that on some bad teams. That Arizona team was junk. That New Jersey team, garbage. He's produced on bad teams. You give him somebody good, you see what the hell happens, and you go from there. But again, price is the biggest thing. But that's probably the biggest guy available in this market. Kreider re-upped in New York, obviously, so he's not available. I would have to see the other wingers, but I'm pretty sure it's relatively, not that great, I would say.
The one guy I put on a list of guys I wish they would try to trade maybe 1 or 2 years ago was Alex Tuck for the Vegas Golden Knights, who's on fire right now. So I guess that ship has sailed. And it's like, I'm sick of these other teams having these guys. The pros just have no one. But yeah, I guess Taylor Hall next to Krejci is something I'd be open to seeing. But back to Torrey Krug, though, it seems like you seem to feel pretty strongly that he's going to move on. Someone's going to pay him above what the Bruins will pay him, and he'll take that because this is like his last real chance to cash in at age 29. I honestly think this is going to sound like an a-hole hot take, but I think replacing him with someone who's bigger and plays more stout defense might be more of what they need. And I know that they're going to lose a lot of offense and power play ability without his puck moving. But I think McAvoy could fill that void once he starts to fill out his game offensively. And I think Mac Grizzly can move the puck pretty well. And I think if you replace him and just get bigger and heavier in that decor, you can make it harder for other teams to get to the middle of the net. And you make it easier to push guys away. And so you're not giving up all these deflection goals and goals from in tight. And, like, I don't know. I think maybe it might just be better for the makeup of it. It's nothing against Torrey Krug, but I think it just might be better for the makeup of the team to replace him with a guy like that as opposed to, you know, like an undersized power play guy. I know you love Torrey Krug. I get it. But
yeah,
tell me why I'm wrong.
No. I think that if they do move on from him, it is to achieve what you're talking about, that greater balance. Off the top of my head, I know this is kind of a top-heavy – free agent class on the back end. It's Petrangelo and it's Krug. And so that's sort of what you got there. And then beyond that, I know the guys you're talking about, Joel Edmondson is a free agent. Brendan Dillon, a guy that they were looking at the deadline, is a free agent. So those are two options that kind of fit what you're talking about. Not as much offensive, not as much two-way, but
Top four, though?
What's that? No,
second pairing? Thing.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So, you know, maybe that's a lateral move to them. But, yeah, I don't know what they're going to – I mean, I just think that Krug has priced himself out. I don't think the Bruins want to give him $7 million for the next 7 years. I just don't think that they – I don't want to say –
I don't think they should, honestly.
I don't want to say they don't believe in him per se. I just think that they're mindful of their future come 5 years from now when they have to pay Pastrnak probably – $8 or $9 million, and McAvoy being the franchise guy, it's going to eat into what they can do financially. So
yeah,
I don't think they want to pay. I think they want to pay 29-year-old Torrey Krug $7 million. I don't think they want to pay 35-year-old Torrey Krug $7 million.
Yeah, that's another big part of that. So he's probably going to be their big loss, unless you count like Tuukka Rask getting traded or something. But Torrey Krug is going to be the big void they have to fill, and it'll be interesting to see how they fill it, if they replace him with a similar player or if they go in a different direction. I think I would like to see a different direction, but I don't know. I'm going to wait. I guess we'll wait it out and see. We don't have too much time. Is there an official time for next season to start? They haven't really determined that yet, have they?
It's looking like late December, sometime around Christmas. That's the plan, I think. And they want to do a full 82. They want to get the playoffs done by the end of June. I have no idea how that's going to happen. You're probably talking a lot of 3-4s, a lot of, just a lot of back-to-backs. Again, this is assuming that you're having home games, but it's going to be a grind. And I'm curious what the league does to address it, because I do think that they may have to sort of establish there's not a right way to say this, because, you know, the salary cap is what it is, but it's almost like you need what the Red Sox and the MLB has right now with an alternate grouping that you can kind of bring up and down and shuffle them in and out. I just don't know how they do that, you know, with the current salary cap situation. It's almost like you have to create a rule saying you can carry five guys that are on entry-level deals or something like that, and they don't count. Yeah. You know, they have to, because I think that's from a player safety standpoint, cramming 82 games in from December through the end of April or beginning of May is dangerous. I don't think you can get away with that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they could just do something like the NFL did, where they expanded the practice squad. Maybe they could do something mm-hmm. like that. I mean, if it's, as long as it's league wide and everyone's playing by the same rules, I don't see why they couldn't do something like that. But yeah, all right, but I guess basically what I was asking is, yeah. So, but is the draft coming up?
The draft is like 2 days, I think, after the playoffs end.
Okay.
So that's still another month or two. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, I feel like that. I'm my mindset is like they lost Game 7 of the Cup Final again. There's still two more rounds. Oh boy. We got plenty of time to look at the Bruins offseason. I'm gonna take a deep dive in to see who's available and give you some tangible ideas, because I know I harp on the same points every week and then what do you want? Figure it out. I mean, that's probably not fair of me to do. So I will take a deeper dive into that. And football season's coming up, so I'm gonna give you guys plenty of Patriots coverage. Seems like you guys have enjoyed the Patriots coverage the last couple of weeks. I've been kicking ass in these Zoom meetings. I've been asking a lot of questions of the players, and it's been fun. It's been fun. It was a fun Bruins season up until the end, and it stinks that we're probably never going to see another cup for Chara, and it looks like the core is at least taking another step out the door, which is saddening to see, but I think if Chara retires or if he goes somewhere else, we'll have a lot of good memories to look back on anyway. And Bruins, I don't think it's over for them. I think they'll be right back in the mix next year. Maybe not a top cup contending team. It'll be they'll be hard pressed to put themselves past Tampa, but I think they'll be right back in the mix. I think they have good high end talent still, and they just need to build the pieces around them better. So. That is my conclusion for the Bruins. And how's your sleep doing? How's your mental health doing right now?
Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
Everything is darkness. Basically. Everything sucks when you can't watch your team play more hockey.
I mean, listen, let me say this. Like, I'm happy this is over, but I'm not at the same time. I did not enjoy watching this. I do think that the NHL, listen, it was a fun summer tournament, but I think the NHL playoffs need fans. They add energy and excitement that you can't replicate. The NHL did a great job trying to do this. They're doing a great job still, obviously, with it. But this was a rough watch, I thought, at times. Just the energy was lacking. The ebbs and flows were harder to generate, I found, without the crowd influencing games, influencing teams. So I'm excited for when we get back to normal and we have fans in buildings and we were able to sort of experience the true Stanley Cup playoffs.
No, they're just gonna send us all Oculus Rifts, and we're gonna have to strap on the VR headsets to feel like we're at the game. That's gonna be the new normal. No more actually going to arenas. It's just going to be a big empty box.
I will die. Just let the record show, I will die.
You can pick whatever seat you want. You know, you can be in the front row if you want. Virtually watching them, you know, they'll have haptic technology where you can feel like you're getting hit in the boards, or they're spraying snow in your face. It'll be fun. It'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
Plugging us into the Matrix.
Why not? What's the worst that could happen? Except
the worst that could happen is we wake up from our Matrix dream state and there's just a pile of red goo and exactly. Look at all these machines flying around this empty wasteland. You know, that's the worst that could happen, but we'll be fine.
Other than that, it sounds great.
Yeah, no, it's a great, great world. You can do whatever you want. Yeah, no, hopefully when the league comes back, they're actually letting fans into the arena. They're going to start doing that in the NFL. NFL is basically acting like the virus doesn't exist this whole time.
Right.
I don't know. I think the NHL has did an amazing job keeping everyone safe and healthy. Anyway, there's zero positive tests for a long time. Mm-hmm. But to your point about the quality of the series, I think there's just a human nature that, like, once a team gets down in a series, not that this happened with the Bruins, but, like, once a team gets down in a series, they just sort of look at it like, let's just we can go home. We're not good enough. I don't think that's what happened with the Bruins or even the Avs last night. I think those are two teams that clearly wanted to try to come back and win their series. But, yeah, I think it's definitely hurting the overall quality of the competition to not have fans there and to have them trapped in a bubble where they can't see their families. I think that's definitely taking a toll on them. And so
yeah.
I don't know if the series are going to get better or worse as we go along, but I think that's just sort of the reality.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that 100%. And I think that, you know, we're going to see what happens here with, you know, with opening arenas and whatnot. The NFL, like you mentioned, is looking like they're going to try that. And, you know, hopefully things progress to a point where we can actually have that being the case. I don't think that another bubble situation will work. I don't think the players will sign off on it. The amount of coaches and players that have talked about the mental struggle of being in a bubble, I think it's too much for the PA to sign off on it again for a regular season, maybe two-game regular season. I just don't see that happening. Even if it's for 20 games, this was such a hard sell for the players, I think, that you couldn't do it for a full, you know, month or 2 months. You need A, multiple cities, and B, you need to get the guys to be on board with it, and I don't think they want it.
I think they should be able to do what baseball is doing, where I know baseball's had its share of outbreaks and you can't stop everyone from being an idiot. But I don't know, maybe they learn their lessons from that and they let people they allow teams to travel and go to all the other cities and play in their own arenas and all that. Mm-hmm. Maybe they could figure that out. NFL's doing the same thing. They're letting teams travel everywhere, but they're having daily testing or every other day if a team goes long enough without positive tests. And we haven't heard about any outbreaks in the NFL. And testing is going to go way up. We're going to get more testing for everyone. Everyone's going to be able – there's going to be home tests for pretty much everybody coming soon from what I heard. So I think with the increased testing, I think they'll be able to let teams – like they won't have to do a bubble again, I don't think. Hopefully not. I mean, we'll see what happens. We'll see if there's another spike. We'll see if there's a spike in the fall or the winter. You never know. But, I mean,
yeah.
I think the way it's going now and the way the NFL is doing it is a way that could happen in the future. We'll see what happens when guys are crashing into each other's heads on 60 plays in a row. But we should be excited for football season. Football's around the corner, and it's a fascinating season.
I'm amazed that the NFL has been able to put on these training camps with almost zero outbreaks. I mean, you're talking about massive training camp rosters, guys that are living out of hotels, guys that are, you know, living their lives still, and again, then going to practice every day and running into each other at full speed. It's amazing that they haven't had an outbreak yet.
Thought they did with those false positives. And look, I mean, all they did was they had the guys miss practice and then they found out it was false and they had them go back the next day. The daily testing, I think, is really working for them. And I mean, and you know, if they do have an outbreak or if a star catches COVID, they'll just lie about it. They'll just lie about it or cover it up. That's what the NFL does, or pretend it's not happening. They're going to move forward with the season. One of my friends texted me. It's like, let's be honest, the NFL would play through a nuclear winter if they had to. So we are going to have a football season. It's going to be relatively normal. The season, the stadiums will be empty, so it won't have the same feel. But some teams are letting fans back in. So I am excited to see what happens there. Patriots, I mean, we'll see how they look. But, I mean, everyone's talking about, like, lack of a preseason, lack of time to get everything ready. But that's what every team is going through. I think we're going to see the first month of the season is going to be a little sloppy. And I think that the Patriots are going to be no stranger to that. But I don't know. It was interesting because I asked Juwan Bentley, the Patriots linebacker, about this yesterday. And he he said something along the lines of, well, you know, everybody's dealing with the same thing. We just need to adapt. And as far as like not having game situations to get yourself ready, we're trying to sprinkle that into practice as much as possible, which is nothing new for the Patriots. We see it every year how they sprinkle in situational stuff. So you get into a game and then you sort of at least know the situation. Mm-hmm. And like, you never really know how all the pieces are going to fit until you're in a real game and the bolts are flying at full speed. But this just goes back to my whole point about this season is I think because of Bill Belichick, the Patriots are going to be better prepared than every other team in the league. They're going to be the best coached team in the league, and they might not have the most talent. And they might have a new quarterback and new offensive pieces still trying to figure out how to work together. But I think they're going to be the best prepared for situations. They're going to screw up the least, and other teams are going to screw up, and the Patriots are going to find ways to win games. I mean, that's just sort of my take. I don't know how you feel about it, but I guess it's time to start looking towards football season at this point.
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, listen, I always like
– You sound thrilled.
This is the most excited you're going to get out of me right now, being up for this many hours in a row.
I've been awake for 72 hours. Leave me alone.
No, I'm excited, though. I listen, from the moment Tom Brady left, I've been looking forward to seeing how this team is going to look. I didn't want Tom Brady to leave, but it happened. It's over with, and now the next chapter begins. And we'll see how Belichick handles it. We'll see how the team offense handles it. But I'm excited to see how this all shakes out. And I think it'll be interesting because you have your two road games at the end of the year, Seattle and Kansas City. The fact that there aren't going to be fans or there will be limited fans changes that dramatically. And so I think that to what you're talking about, sort of that point of you know, peppering in these game situations, that's a situation that I want to see unfold. I want to see how that plays out for this team. Regardless of who's at quarterback or you know how young the defense is at certain positions, I want to see how that plays out and if they do have the Belichick advantage because of it.
Yeah, and a lot of the reporters that have been there are saying all the guys that were rookies last year are looking like they're taking a huge step forward this year. So it'll be exciting to see what guys like Damian Harris and Gunnar Olszewski and I don't know if Jacoby Myers is going to make the team. I feel like he's on the bubble, but. I'm excited to see how those – N'Keal Harry. I'm excited to see how those guys do with a year under their belt, hopefully staying healthy and all that. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting, I think. It's going to be fun to watch this team screw up. Tom Brady is obviously better than Cam Newton, but I think there could be something to the idea that they replaced a guy who knew it was his last year, which is what Tom told Howard Stern, that he basically knew that 2019 was his last season. So we played that season basically with a foot out the door and didn't seem happy the whole time. Didn't seem like he really wanted to be there. They're replacing that with a guy who's motivated to prove everybody wrong. And he is a good teammate. He likes to see his teammates succeed. He's enthusiastic. He has a lot of energy and all that. And he does put the work in, and he is a smart player, and he is all those things. So, I mean, I want to see – everyone loves to point to him diving away from that fumble in the Super Bowl, which is, you know, that might be the defining moment of his career because that was the big moment in the Super Bowl. But he's a guy who looks like he wants to go out there and redeem himself and shove it for everyone who didn't want to sign him and doubt him. So,
yeah,
I want to see how that looks with Cam Newton at least a month from now because it seems like every team is going to need a month to get going.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before with him where you know, this sort of really is his chance, right? Like, this is it. If he can't work with Belichick in New England when he's playing for his career, is he ever going to get another chance elsewhere?
That's very true. This is his chance to get a big contract and all that. If he falters, like, where does he go from here?
Yeah, exactly. Question. Exactly, because if you can't make it work with Belichick, and McDaniels, two guys that are pretty well respected throughout the league, obviously. And when you're playing for peanuts, you know, I mean, that's what more incentive could you have as a quarterback, you know, and as a front office to believe in that guy if he can't deliver when he's literally playing for his career, his next chance after two injury plagued seasons? When would he ever be good again? You know, it's a real question.
It is indeed. The one-year window for Cam Newton in New England. I guess windows are the theme of this episode. So A lot of window talk coming up in the coming weeks with the Bruins, and we'll see what it looks like. But yeah, these camp videos of Brady, you want to talk about cognitive dissonance. I'm watching all these videos of Tom Brady doing Tom Brady things in camp with the Bucks. It's just making me sad, man. It's just it warms my heart a little bit to see him being excited and like doing the things that he does, getting fired up, making plays. Just the fact that he's doing it in a Buccaneers uniform, and this is my pessimism coming out with that and the Patriots. Like, is he really gonna light it up and like and make Belichick look bad for pushing him out the door, basically letting him leave and then replacing him with Cam Newton? And I don't know. I think Bray's gonna light it up the way he's looking. The only question is, can he stay healthy for a full year? Because we started seeing him get banged up. But I don't know how much of those videos you've seen, but it's just
I avoid
it
them.
It is tough to watch for Patriots fans, I think.
Yeah, I avoid them. I don't need that. I don't need that in my life. There's enough.
We got enough going on here.
There's enough bad energy. And
we got enough swirling around in our brains, people. You know, we just watched the Bruins lose again. Same old problems again. Nobody listening to us again. Are there any horse socks? Is anybody listening to me? I feel like the old lady in Billy Madison. I need to piss myself for someone to pay attention to me at this point.
It's so hard to give a shit about anything right now. It really is. It's like so hard. I'm trying my absolute best.
Oh my God. I know. It's hard.
I'm just like, okay, yeah, whatever. Cool. I'm going to try to pay my rent on time and pay the electric bill.
Don't evict me, please. That's all I ask.
Yeah.
A lot going on in everyone's mind, but, hopefully it was therapeutic for you guys to, listen. I'll let you go and I'll let you go, get some sleep. Maybe. I don't know if you're still going to be working, but it's definitely not healthy to stay up more than 24 hours in a row. You need to get some sleep, and I think we have a meeting later, and you're gonna do things later.
Yeah, I gotta do that.
Family or something, or your friends or whatever. But I'm gonna leave you to your devices. Thanks for indulging me this morning, Tyler Lee. Lee Anderson, the best.
I'm gonna watch some porn.
Jesus Christ.
I'm going to unwind with a nice, sad porn. No,
I'm sure the Pornhub traffic spiked in Boston last night.
Oh, I definitely
That's
did.
Usually what happens. There's definitely probably a Barstool article about that already. I'll have to do some research on that.
Yeah, it was, just game, go, it was just game three
highlights.
I need
to go into incognito mode real quick, do some research.
It was just game three highlights.
Yeah. Let's just watch game one over and over again. That's what happened. Yeah, so Bruins done. There's still be plenty to talk about in the offseason, though. Plenty of questions moving forward. We will keep talking about that. Football season coming up. We're going to transition into that. Hopefully you enjoyed our sports talk. We'll try to get into more other real-life stuff because I think that's the best way to have fun on a show like this. We don't want to be doom and gloom all the time, of course. We want to have fun with it. We want you to enjoy listening to us. So I hope you enjoyed listening to us. It is the Sports Up Sidelines podcast, full episode. We don't know when we'll get back to you next week. We'll try to get up weekly episodes from here on out since we don't have post-game shows anymore. But there will be plenty of hockey to talk about, plenty of football, plenty of other stuff. Celtics might be playing for a championship as a veteran 12 years in the basketball writing business. Who gave Stephen A. Smith his foot in the door. I think it's very important that I start to give more love to the Celtics. So we will continue that. And thanks for listening. I love you. If you're listening this far, thank you. Please rate and review. We need more ratings and reviews. We need to move up those iTunes rankings. We need to get into the top 5,000 in sports. So
we'll get there.
We'll get there. We enjoy your company. Thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you again next week.